Welcome to the premiere edition of the Crunch Time with KD podcast, bringing you the latest and greatest in conversation about your Dallas Cowboys. We have a great show for you as we kick off our off-season evaluations and permeations for the Cowboys Nation. As you know, you can read me pretty much daily on bloggingtheboys.com, along with a stable of what I consider to be the most talented collection of Cowboys writers never to have access to a locker room or press conference. You can follow me on Twitter at KDP10for10. That's at KDP10for10. I also man the BTB account at Blogging the Boys and the Facebook page Blogging the Boys. You can also catch me talking non-sports goodness on Flood the Block Radio every Tuesday night starting at 7 p.m. on rocktheflow.com. Okay, now that we got all the commercialization out of the way, let's dive into some Cowboys talk. We're going to touch on a couple of topics today. First, we'll briefly discuss the latest in Cowboys news, and then we'll also take our first sneak peek into the best part of the offseason, in my humble opinion, the annual amateur draft. I'll be bringing on a special guest to bring us his take on the front runners for the Dallas Cowboys at the number 14 spot, where they're slated after their 8-8 finishing record. None other than BTB member and resident Mike Mayock clone, Chia Crack, is going to be joining us, so stay tuned for that. That should be a fun segment. Of course, the biggest news of the week has been all of the moving and shaking taking place in the Cowboys coaching ranks. The first domino to drop was that secondary coach Dave Campbell was not going to be brought back. Appreciate your service, sir, but it was time to go. Then word came out late Tuesday that offensive line coach Hudson Houck would move along into retirement. Landry hat tip to you, sir. Their replacements, Bill Callahan for the line and Jerome Henderson for the DBs. Now, today we got the interesting news that Bill Callahan is not just going to coach the line, but he's also been named the offensive coordinator for the 2012 season. As many of you know, that Jason Garrett took on the dual role of head coach and offensive coordinator, much to the chagrin of some of our fans out there, once the Cowboys were turned down by Paul Christ, who heads up the University of Wisconsin offense. The hopes of some were dashed once it was revealed that Jason Garrett would retain play calling duties, so there will be some shakeup that we're going to need to analyze over the next coming days, including Callahan's career as an offensive coordinator. His career came to prominence when he was in Oakland under John Gruden, coordinating the offense from 98 through his ascension to head coach in 2002 and a Super Bowl appearance. Callahan actually pulled off the double. His team led the NFL in rushing in 2000, then turned around and led it in passing in 2002. To me, that symbolizes a diverse and adaptable mindset and the ability to go with what works for you. The disposed of Houck held the title of run game coordinator, which undoubtedly falls to Callahan now. But with him being the coordinator, what about John Garrett, Jason's brother? He's a tight ends coach, but also known as a passing game coordinator. You'd think the title of offensive coordinator trumps any nepotism, right? Not saying that John isn't a worthy position coach, but it does make you think. Now, when Callahan was brought on board, there was a pause amongst a lot of fans that didn't have a favorable memory of what he did in previous high-profile stops. After flaming out in Oakland, he then went on to be the head man at the college level, trying to rebuild the Nebraska Cornhuskers into a national power. Now, those of you that look to these failings to evaluate Callahan, I say slow your roll just a second. There's a huge difference in being the head coach of a team, much less a college program, than there is in leading a single unit. Callahan had 53 players to coordinate in Oakland and probably around 90 in Lincoln. College coaching includes far more than X's and O's. You know, it also is the recruitment world and the hobnobbing with boosters and such and such. That's a whole different world than teaching hand placement and footwork techniques to 10 professionals. And even though he's been given the title of offensive coordinator, please believe, Jason Garrett is going to be as hands-on as ever, and he is just going to now have a sounding board in play designing, someone to help script and bounce ideas off of. Callahan has been versed in numerous types of offenses, so that's going to be a plus. He's part of the West Coast offense. He's taught that, which is the other branch of the Sid Gilman coaching tree. Garrett's from Air Coryell, and then the West Coast offense is the other side. Wouldn't it be beautiful to watch Dallas run some of the running back screens that we've seen executed on us? One of our resident NFL insiders on BTB, he spoke of Callahan's obsessive attention to detail when coaching the offensive line in a clinic that he was leading. talking about, you know, how meticulous he was about hand technique and footwork technique and the angle that your foot should be in when you're in your stance and things along those lines. The question will be if he can get the young guys to perform these techniques with muscle memory instead of having to think through everything. Far too often we saw play clock after play clock winding down and Romo was telling the offensive line what to do, sometimes to no avail. Arizona game, anyone? But Callahan's been the O-line coach and assistant head coach in New York with the Jets for the last four seasons, since 2008. After 2010, though, a rift developed when other teams weren't given permission to talk to him for higher pedigreed positions. He refused a contract extension with the team and seemed to be basically biding his time till he could hit the open market. But in 08 and 09, Callahan did lead three offensive linemen to Pro Bowl berths. Guard Alan Faneca, tackle DeBrickashaw Ferguson, and center Nick Mangold. And of course, all of these guys come into the league with high pedigree. And we don't have that in Dallas at the moment, but you could still see the quality of the work that he was able to do. And this was done with an aging LaDainian Tomlinson and a near-bust first-round pick in Sean Green as a change of pace back. If he can get those kind of holes to open for visionary DeMarco Murray and the shifty Felix Jones, look out, world. Now, on the defensive side of the ball, Jerome Henderson takes over for Dave Campo, as I mentioned earlier. And Henderson has spent the last 3 years in Cleveland coaching the defensive backs there. He was instrumental in the development of some up-and-coming defensive stars in Joe Hayden and at cornerback and safety T.J. Ward. Both of those players made the all-rookie team in 2010. Henderson is a veteran of the position. He's played in the league for 8 years. He started with the Patriots in the early 90s, moved on to Buffalo, Philadelphia, and spent some time with the Jets as well. He's played in two Super Bowls with the Bills, actually against the Dallas Cowboys in Super Bowl 28 and with New England in Super Bowl 31. Now, back on the coaching side of things, Jerome Henderson also spent some time in 2007 and 2008 with the New York Jets. And who happened to be starting his career with the Jets in 2007? None other than the best cornerback since Deion Sanders, Darrelle Revis. He was a rookie in 2007 and made his first Pro Bowl in 2008, all under the tutelage of Jerome Henderson. So you're going to actually see that Henderson has a lot of pedigree when it comes to developing young secondary talent. And that kind of leads me to believe that it's not out of the question for the Cowboys to be looking to go young in the secondary in the upcoming draft, or maybe pluck a young free agent or two off of the available heap. Okay, I promised you guys some draft talk, and that's what we're going to be doing here on Crunch Time with KD over the offseason. And, of course, obviously on BTB, we'll be doing a lot of coverage. So let's jump into that now.
Now we welcome to Crunch Time with KD, the one and only. Our version of Mike Mayock and Mel Kiper rolls into one, but with a better hairstyle. Our man Tia Crack. What up, Tia? How you doing, brother?
Good, man. How are you?
Now, before we get into specifics on certain players, I wanted to get your take. What's your general preferred draft strategy? Is it best player available, or do you want to target the biggest area of need, or is it some combination of those two?
Well, you know, I wouldn't say that's something that's an exact science. I mean, a lot of people think they have their idea of what to do. What I like to do is when I make a board or if I was a team, I would try to look at the best player on the board. If it fits a need, I mean, that's great. But, I mean, I wouldn't be taking a wide receiver if we have wide receivers. But if there's a cornerback there and I need a cornerback, but I have a guard rated higher, I might take the guard. So I feel like to mix in the need and best player available. It kind of goes both ways, you know.
Gotcha. All right, now let's get down to the real business. Who do you have your eyes on? Because we know from last year your coverage on all of the draft prospects, it was mesmerizing, the amount of effort that you put into following these guys throughout the year and the writers that you gave us on them. So who do you have your eyes on for this April's draft?
Right now, my favorite player, I have to say, is Melvin Ingram, South Carolina. I mean,
okay.
The guy, he's just a monster. I'm not a Spencer fan. People can bring up how many tackles he has or this and that, but if you're averaging 5.5 sacks a year next to DeMarcus Ware, that's a problem, folks. I mean,
it doesn't make much sense, huh?
Not to me. I mean, I know we need 5 techs, this and that, but you have DeMarcus Ware on the other side of you. You're getting one-on-ones with right tackles. And if you can't – we've seen this guy disappear for weeks at a time. Look at the last game of the year. I mean, right there, that shows why would you want to pay someone that doesn't show up in big games? And to me, Melvin Ingram is a big, big-time player.
So that's number one, Melvin Ingram's on top of your board. Who else do you like?
Number two, right now, I'd have to say David DeCastro. I mean, I know it's not a sexy pick. It's the offensive guard. But the guy is a blue-chip player. I mean, he's phenomenal. And part of the problem, like today, Todd Archer was talking about on ESPNDallas.com, is that people are overvaluing tackles and not talking about guards as much. And you look at the Saints, look at the Giants, look at the Packers, look at the Ravens, they have an interior pocket, and they keep that pocket clean. And this kid, I don't know how he falls to 14. I mean, just because he's a guard, the Cowboys loved Ayupati, like Ayupati a few years ago. And they're going to love this kid. So if he's there, I think that's a dream scenario for the Cowboys because it's best available player and it fits a need.
Okay, well, let me ask you this along the lines of DeCastro because this is something that I wanted to touch on.
Yes.
Obviously, this year, free agency is back normal. It's going to be before the draft. So do the Cowboys look at Carl Nix or another player that's at that position and then maybe possibly just double down with DeCastro? Or if you had your preference, which way would you go? Would you go with a proven veteran, or would you go with a rookie that you can have for the next 12, 15 years?
If because they can afford one key signing. This is an area that I was looking at with guard. And today, actually, Stephen Jones is talking about that. They were saying how they're not going to let defense just be what they're focusing on. So, to me, I think if they can go out and sign a Carl Nix or Ben Grubbs, someone of that caliber, I mean, yeah, I would do that and then focus on defense. But what Steven's saying today is that they were so tight last year and they really couldn't make any moves. They feel going forward they have a little bit of cap room. And if it's a big-time free agent, like a guard, hey, man, that's a great move because if you get a guard next to Tyron Smith and Doug Free, that's big. So, yeah, I would definitely go for the veteran.
Okay, so we got Ingram, we got DeCastro. What did you think about the BCS championship game? We saw some great individual players on the Alabama side. There's also a couple on the LSU side. The Alabama really kind of ruled the day on Monday night. So, what were your thoughts on some players taken away from that game?
Oof, I tell you what, for me, that was like a prospect dream right there. For me,
right.
Courtney Upshaw, he stood out. He had a great game. I thought he was slow. Because he's a bigger guy, he's 265. He didn't look slow. Because there's one play where they ran an option, and he ran down. He met up with the quarterback, but he ran down the running back in the same play. It was amazing.
Yep.
I thought Drake Kirkpatrick had a great game. Problem is, I don't see how he falls to 14. He's 6'3". He has ball skills, and he's a great tackler. Cornerback's a big need. If he could fall to 14, you run up to the board, run up to the commission, take that pick. And then the one guy that stood out to me on LSU, actually, was the defensive tackle, Michael Brockers. He just declared today, actually. Him and Claiborne declared today. He hired an agent, and they're having a conference at 4 o'clock with Les Miles. He's 6'6", 306. He's a big guy. He's disruptive. Not many disruptive five techs. He can play inside. He can play outside. I mean, he's going to be a big-time prospect when the combine rolls around. I would keep your eye on him.
What are your thoughts on Alabama safety, Mark Barron?
Mark Barron? I'm just going to bring him up. I love Mark Barron.
Okay.
I didn't get to see him too much this year. I watched a couple of games, but in the championship game, he was very impressive. His coverage skills look good. I thought he wasn't as rangy as he was, but he has some real good range. What I like about him is he seems like a smart player. Right now, I don't think Dallas in the secondary has a smart player. I don't think Sensabaugh is very smart at all. He's always out of position. Ewum, I mean, he's solid, but he's not great. He's not bad, but he's not what we're looking for. Mark Barron's an interesting guy at 14. If he was a free safety, I wouldn't even have a discussion right now. I would say Mark Barron's the number one guy on our board. But we have two strong safeties, and also they bring Ewum back. There's no free safety. And that's the same thing with Barron. He's another strong safety. I mean, I love the kid. It's just that it just doesn't make sense for us, I don't think, at 14.
Yeah, no, I definitely couldn't see us doing Barron at 14, but if in the scenario where maybe if Ingram, DeCastro, and Kirkpatrick are off the board and Dallas can work a little bit of trade down, trade up magic, and then maybe drop down into the 20s, Barron might be the type of guy that they would be looking for in that scenario. That's kind of what I've been working on in my head.
I agree. I think if they were to pick up some picks and trade down, something which a lot of people wanted us to do last year, that's something we'll look at. Me, I'm not a big trade down guy because I don't think we're the Patriots. We take these later picks and we have not had success with them. The thing is the Cowboys site the other day, they only give 18 to 20 grades every year on the first round
grades, exactly.
Yeah, that's only 20 players. If you're at 14, you drop down, man. It's a risk. It's a risk you're not going to get a number one first rated player. And that's my problem. I have enough just another guys. I want players. I want players in my defense. Because if you look at Ray Lewis, talk about the Ravens defense, they have three players in three areas. They have Lodi Nod up front, they have Ray Lewis in the middle, and they have Ed Reed in the secondary. So each level of defense, you have a playmaker.
It's not even just each level. It's in the middle of each level that they have a top-tier player.
Correct. And like I just said, I mean, each level they have an amazing player. I mean, I think we have Ratliff, who's phenomenal. We have DeMarcus Ware, who's phenomenal. But in the middle, Sean Lee, great player. But in the secondary, besides Mike Jenkins, I don't think we have anybody. I love Mike Jenkins. I think he had a really good year coming back.
Yeah, and I thought he showed a Warriors mentality fighting back from injuries. I mean, you can call him Mr. Glass if you want to, but that man made it back on the field after almost every single time he went out. So I definitely give much props.
Yeah. When he was gone, it was a problem. I mean, he's our best cover guy. People can say, oh, he's soft, he's that. He fights. He fought this year. Last year, he quit. No problem. He quit last year. But this year, yeah, he separated his shoulder twice. He came back, he fought. When he was on the field, he was locked down. He's not our problem at all. It's the other side. And the good thing about this draft this year is there's guys in the second round. There's guys in the third round you can get cornerback at. So I think if they're not in love with any of the cornerbacks in the first round, they have options, which is great.
Yeah, the guy I'm targeting, if we don't go Kirkpatrick in the first round, is Chase Minifield out of Virginia. You familiar with him?
I like him too. Yeah, he's a smart player. His father was a player too. He played for Cleveland for all those years.
Yep.
The Cowboys like Virginia players too. We had Ogletree, we had John Phillips. They like that type of player down there, and he'd be a great fit in the second round. Another corner I really like, who just declared, is from South Carolina, Stephon Gilmore. He's a little leggier. He's like 6'1", but he reminds me a lot of Kyle Wilson, who the Cowboys gave a first-round grade a couple of years ago. And right now, he's bordering on second-round territory. I mean, he might go in the first, but if he's there in the second, that's a great fit for the Cowboys. He can play a lot of different areas. He can punt return, too. He's very versatile.
So how? Give us a sneak preview. How long before your big board comes out?
I got one up now, but that was a couple weeks ago. Now that everyone's declaring, the last day is Sunday. I should have my board out on Monday. I already have a little put together, you know, top 50, but I'm going to get down to it this weekend once we know everyone that declares.
All right. We're definitely going to look forward to that. And, again, this is we've been spending some time with Chia Crack on BTB. He's one of our most prolific fan post writers and commenters, and we definitely appreciate you taking time out your day to spend some time with our listeners on the Crunch Time with KD podcast, bro.
Well, thank you, bro. I appreciate it.
All right, man. We'll catch up with you soon.
All right, man. Take care.
Once again, that was Chia. Make sure you check him out on bloggingtheboys.com over in the fan post section. He's always in the highly recommended area, and I'm sure once he drops that big board this coming Monday, it'll skyrocket. It'll receive probably about 15 recs because that's what you guys do. And we're going to go ahead and wind it up on the premiere edition of Crunch Time with KD. I appreciate you guys tuning in for this half an hour out of your life, talking this Cowboys goodness. We'll be back soon with our next episode. So stay tuned. Be on the lookout for that. And again, appreciate you staying with us.